Bibi Fahodie, welcome to the African Liberation Media Podcast. Media solely focused on the liberation and empowerment of African people. I'm your host, Gullah Jack, a.k.a. Russell Swilly. Let's get to it.
Bibi Fahodie, African family. This is your brother, Amos, and I'm here with Gullah Jack and Baba Makeru, and it feels good to be back in the studio. Been away for a couple of weeks, dealing with some family issues. On February the 6th, my first son, first child, made his appearance
Ashe, another strong African enters the universe.
Ashe. And his Earth Day is actually the day after my Earth Day on February the 5th.
Oh, how about that?
So that was definitely one of the best Earth Day gifts I could say I ever received. Welcoming him to the world, young Kamal Kepakara. And this has been a long 2.5 weeks, just, you know, staying up late nights. You know how it is when you first have a child, just tired, family coming in and helping out. You know, in the African community, we do everything as a community, and we know that the family comes first. So that was a reason for us not recording for the past couple of weeks. But we're back today, and we're going to deal with quite a few topics since we've been off for a while. Number one, you know, dealing with the settlement that Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid had with the NFL. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about Umar Johnson and his announcement of the school in Delaware, dealing with that situation. We're also going to deal with Jesse Smollett and the new consensus by the police that he might have paid two Nigerians to attack him and staging an attack on himself. And we're also going to deal with the latest confrontation between Floyd Mayweather and T.I., we know it's NBA All-Star Weekend this weekend, and a lot of these celebrities are actually here in Charlotte. But we're going to deal with what Floyd had to say in his response back to T.I. and why it is very important. Probably, I would say, one of the best responses I've ever heard Floyd say, because everything else he says pretty much is garbage. But just want to get you brothers' opinions on the first topic dealing with Kaepernick. We know that it's been a little over 3 years since Kaepernick first took a knee in his protest against oppression, racial oppression, white oppression against African people in the United States, primarily dealing with police brutality and the unfair injustice of police officers not being held accountable for the murder and other crimes that they've committed against African people, African men, African women, and African children. And recently we know that he settled with the NFL in his lawsuit for collusion amongst NFL owners against him from being able to play football in the National Football League. Eric Reid was also part of that settlement and also part of that lawsuit. And he signed a contract with the Carolina Panthers here in Charlotte earlier. Well, I should say last season. And he just signed a new contract extension. But he was also a part of that. And he was also blackballed for a while as well until he was signed by the Panthers. So it's estimated or it's rumored that Kaepernick could have received up to $80 million for this settlement, and Eric Reid could have received at least $20 million. So with that type of money, we're talking about close to $100 million. We have to believe that the NFL didn't want some pertinent information about what took place to get out. And we know in most cases, when you have a settlement out of court, the party who wants to settle it is usually guilty. Mm-hmm. Just like R. Kelly, you know, settled out of court with the family of the victims, the 14-year-old girl that he urinated on. Mm. So A lot of people have been texting me and asking me, what are my thoughts on Kaepernick? What are my thoughts on him settling? Did he sell out? That's been a question that a lot of people ask. Somebody also stated, he was fighting for racial injustice. He should have continued his case and tried to beat the NFL in court. My personal opinion, I'll say this. A lot of times we look for the symbolism behind court cases and just symbolism in general. African people, we tend to be a very symbolic people. And with this Kaepernick situation, if you can get a organization to basically admit that they were in the wrong by giving you $80 million, I personally think that that's the smart move to take the money instead of walking away with a quote-unquote moral victory. Walk away with the real victory. And I think Kaepernick will be judged not by taking the money, but I think on what he chooses to do now that he has this money, if he chooses to go out and be a community activist, if he chooses to go out and actually use the money in a positive way to create and make real change take place.
I concur, brother. Once again, a pleasure to be here, and congratulations to BB 48. If Colin Kaepernick were to make a statement such as, head trauma is a hoax, that would be selling out. If he were to make a statement such as the NFL is a model for equity and fairness, that would be selling out per se. But in the case of Colin Kaepernick, clearly there was a smoking gun. We have discussed this coming into the studio. Tangible evidence, more than likely emails, texts, phone records, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to echo a comment made by a Jewish guy who's not a Zionist, Dave Zirin of edgeofsports.com, who tends to be one of the more fair sports commentators. He said that rarely will you get white supremacy or a billionaire class to admit to something of this magnitude. Typically, their modus operandi is to have or proceed with their arrogance that they can silence whoever they want to silence without any repercussions. Now, this comes from Dave Zirin, and I concur. I really like Zirin up to this point. He is he has no problems with anybody criticizing the Jewish lobby. AIPAC stood up for the young sister who told the truth about the power wielded inside the Beltway as a result of Jewish organizations, AIPAC in particular. But back to Kaepernick, you know, that is the critical point. You know, this it's a dent in the armor of the billionaire white supremacist class to feel that they can silence anybody without any repercussions. You know, twin with that, they were under pressure by this president and this guy, this pizza, Papa John's Pizza, and for them to admit that is a slap in the face of white supremacy in the billionaire class. Victory for race, victory for classless people who are in dire straits.
Absolutely. I totally agree with both comments. You know, and I think based on the history, here's a guy that made a $1 million commitment and followed through even though he didn't have a job. Now, you know, he was still, you know, obviously receiving some income from Nike and others, but he followed through on his commitment. There's a list of organizations that he contributed to. I really wish, you know, Brother Singleton at the Mills Place had been able to get in early, you know, when people were making those submissions. I know there's a brother down in Fayetteville that has a program very similar to the Mills Place that Kaepernick donated either $25,000 or $50,000 to. So I think the proof will be in, as Brother Amo says, you know, how he uses the money. And based on his history, I would expect I would expect more of the same, really. I would expect more of continuing to support worthwhile causes. We may not agree with every dime that he gives to whoever, but as long as, you know, if a group like the Mayo's Place can benefit, then we have to see it as a net positive. And at the same time, we view everything holistically. So, you know, we got to look at the sum total of, you know, where the money is going. I don't see this as anything other than a tremendous victory against a very arrogant class of capitalists who believe they don't have to answer to anybody.
And it's funny you say that, because initially when he announced his intent to file the lawsuit, you had a lot of pundits in the media. I remember Stephen A. Smith, Jason Whitlock,
Lord have mercy,
and other pundits, Will Cain and others, saying things like, well, he doesn't have a chance to prove collusion. Good luck with that. The NFL basically laughed him off like nothing would ever come of this lawsuit. And now they had to tuck their tail between their legs and pretty much pay him out because his lawyer was able to find evidence. I think that the billionaires of the NFL wanted to send a message by not putting Kaepernick on the field. We all know that. They tried to change course because they knew they were guilty. So they said, well, let's get Eric Reed in there and let's sign him to a team so that it'll look less obvious that we're blackballing both of these guys. Because Kaepernick was a quarterback. Some people try to use the argument to say that he wasn't a very good quarterback, even though he took a team to the Super Bowl back in 2013. People tried to say that he wasn't a good quarterback and that his skills were diminishing and that the teams didn't really need a service. You had teams that were signing quarterbacks that hadn't played in over 6 years, that hadn't threw a pass. I believe it was the Baltimore Ravens who bought in Josh Woodrum, and he hadn't played in the NFL or started an NFL game in his whole career.
Yeah, and this year, several NFL teams reached out to 43-year-old Matt Hasselbeck, who hasn't played in 4 or 5 years, to come in and be a backup. So these pundits were right in one sense that collusion is very difficult to prove. Very difficult to prove. But they won the case without having to prove collusion because the NFL has so much dirt in their emails, phone records, and, Garagus has represented Michael Jordan and a lot of other high-profile clients, constructed a brilliant case against the NFL. And what they hoped, Brother Amos, the signing of Eric Reed was actually their last gasp. You might want to call it a Hail Mary. When they signed Eric Reed, what they hoped to do was to get Eric Reed to drop his part of the collusion case. That was the intent. They'll never admit this.
And they hoped to catch him dirty by continuously.
Lord have mercy! I mean, just absolutely ridiculous in terms of the number of times he was tested. You can't tell me that wasn't political. But when Eric Reed said, when they asked Eric Reed, said, does this signing mean that you're dropping your collusion case? And he said, absolutely not. He said, young black people, unarmed black people are still being killed by the police. Why would I drop my case? And so that was the monkey wrench. See, because they threw the Hail Mary, right? You know, and they didn't have R.C. Owens or T.O. down there to make the catch, or Drew Pearson or some of these guys that have made these Hail, Billy White Shoes Johnson. You know, they didn't have somebody. They had nobody. So they were essentially toast from that point forward. And so now I think in the context of what Zirin is saying, the NFL players now really have a powerful weapon at their disposal. Now, whether they will use it or how they will use it, you know, I don't know. But, you know, they may not even try to sign. There's a rumor going that, Lord, of all teams, the Patriots may sign Kaepernick as a backup to Brady. But, man, I know these athletes, just like Ali, they don't want to walk away from something they love doing. The kid Kyler Murray has decided he wants to play football rather than baseball. But whatever the case, I think this is a net win, in my opinion, and the proof will be in where the donations go. So, I told Reggie, hey, man, let's get in some of these guys' ears and see, because there's no program more deserving of support than the Males Place, Brother Reggie Singleton and the Mashari and the good Warriors over there. So, yeah, that's it. So why don't you tell us about what happened almost with Smollett, because I really wasn't following the case other than I saw – A lot of people were criticizing black men for not, being more vociferous in their support. And now it's apparently a fraud.
Yeah, I didn't even know who Smollett was until
I never heard of
this came out, because I never watched any of the shows that he was an actor on. So Jesse Smollett is a homosexual TV actor. I believe he played in the show Empire. That's primarily what he's known for. And it was initially reported that he was attacked by two white supremacists. And in the attack, they used, quote unquote, homosexual and racial slurs to basically degrade him. And they beat him up and put a noose around his neck. And essentially, this is supposed to be an attack on gay black men.
Mm.
And the media and other feminist groups ran rampant with this information when it initially came out. Other homosexual gays also, and people who like to call promosexuals, it's a term we get from Walima Baruti, people who... they may not be homosexual, but they promote homosexuality as a normal lifestyle for African people.
Right, right.
So these people were coming out saying, hey, this is serious. And there was silence amongst the straight community, straight black community, specifically the straight black men in the community. And a lot of homosexuals tried to come out and say, well, this is an example of toxic masculinity.
Wow.
Where... because black people or black men, straight black men, are not speaking out or speaking up for the racial attack that happened to a gay man, Jesse Smollett, for this reason, black toxic male masculinity is showing itself and it needs to be removed from the community.
Mm.
There were several articles that I believe Vibe magazine published an article about that. But over the weekend, now, people have been floating around the idea on Twitter and other various social media outlets that this attack could have potentially been a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
So the police in Chicago were investigating what happened. And initially, there were some questions about Jesse Smollett's phone records.
Mm.
They say he turned over some of his phone records to the police, and they could tell that in some way they were altered. Then his attorneys and himself tried to say that, well, they were altered because in order to keep the privacy of people that he was speaking to at the time. But that was the first thing. Then the police announced that they did find two suspects, so they didn't believe that it was a hoax. Then some time passed, and yesterday the police announced that they believed that Jesse Smollett paid two Nigerian brothers to stage this attack on him.
Mm.
So, wow. and we've seen this happen before in other areas where you have people who go out and they stage these racist attacks for some type of agenda.
Mm-hmm.
This agenda, I believe, being pushing to the forefront what they've been trying to say for a while as quote unquote gay being the new black, and how homosexual people are under attack somewhat or somehow because of their choice to be homosexual. Mm. And this is another example of gay black men sodomizing the legacy of black people. When you're dealing with something serious like black people being lynched.
Yes.
Here this brother had two people put a noose around his neck and tried to fake an attack on himself to change the direction of an argument for an agenda that him, and I don't know who else who was supporting him, wanted to promote.
Wow.
I think that that is people who want to promote this agenda. It's no different than what I believe what James Baldwin did when he convinced William Styron to write that novel about Nat Turner.
Right.
You're trying to juxtapose and change the course of reality into your own individual fantasy.
Yes.
And that's very dangerous.
Yes.
So I think honestly, I think an apology is owed to all of the people who put on the attack against straight black men and the straight black community. Because now we can sit back and say that we told you so.
Right. Right.
You know, but another point, he staged this attack with two Nigerian brothers. Okay. Pathetic. I wonder what the white supremacists were saying initially before this was discovered as a hoax. Because, you know, invariably what they try to do is say, well, you know, they try to deflect criticism from themselves and their heinous history and legacy by saying, well, you know, blacks are doing this to other blacks.
Right.
So, you know, this aided and abet that old argument that they try to put forth, you know, where they want to try to, whatever, for, you know, obvious reasons, alleviate whatever blame and legitimate critique of their behavior that's, you know, historically documented.
Yeah, it's a net win, really, for the white supremacy dynamic.
And that's a good point, because you always have those Negroes like, you know, Jesse Lee Peterson, who would say, you know, racism doesn't exist.
Right.
So now this is ammunition for him to say, you know, see, I told you. You know, they do it. And you always have those, you know, right-wing conservatives like Sean Hannity and Alex Jones and all of those guys who would say, you know, where the left and the neocons are staging these racist attacks. They're staging, you know, was the attack in Charlottetown? Virginia.
Charlottesville,
Virginia. Like they'll actually come out and say that these things are staged.
Yeah,
right.
They forever, henceforth, forevermore will question the authenticity of the boy who cried wolf. This attack is no longer legitimate.
Right.
Right. I mean, really, and. You know, in a city where we see, you know, our people being, you know, gunned down every day, you know, both as a result of internecine conflict and as a result of state-sponsored violence. Just very quickly before we move to the next one, while we're in Chicago, Jason Van Dyke, the thug cop who shot Laquan McDonald 16 times, was transferred to a federal prison in Connecticut. Supposedly a group of people, don't know who, went in his cell and dumped a little can of oil on him. He wasn't seriously injured, but he was beaten in prison, which I described as a small measure of retributive justice. Obviously, it's not total justice, because you have the loss of the life. So how did they respond to this? So his lawyer and his wife, you know, they brought out the crying white woman who's talking about her husband, his life is you know, being threatened. And she says, and I don't want to have to bury my husband. Well, Laquan McDonald's family had to bury him. Then she says, check this, Gullah Jack. She says, he's in prison because he was doing his job. Shooting Laquan McDonald 16 times was doing his job. Now, you talk about what Dr. Bobby Wright called a psychopathic racial personality. That's it.
Yes, sir.
Shooting a brother 16 times was in the mind of this white woman her husband was doing his job. So he was beaten in this prison in Connecticut. And the according to the feds, the injuries were minor. But I think part of the reason is because it was a travesty. It was a travesty of justice that this guy is only serving perhaps 81 months. 81 months because the judge decided to collapse all of the charges. He had 16 charges of aggravated battery, which could have carried, each one of those charges could have carried 5 years. And aggravated battery is one of those charges that has a mandatory minimum. So this guy, I think one person, law firm estimated this guy could have gotten 96 years total time, and the judge only gave him 81 months. So apparently, I don't know who, maybe some brothers, maybe some Antifa folks, who knows, in prison decided to say, okay, since y'all didn't deliver Laquan McDonald justice, you know, we're going to deliver him some. So I thought while we was in Chicago, I thought, you know, I would just mention that. But I know we're trying to cover a lot of stuff today. So go ahead to the next.
Well, just a point to your point about what his wife said about him just doing his job. That's what whites have been successful at doing, is influencing the world to believe that they can change what nature says to what the laws that they make say. And that's what power does. The same way that they were able to convince people that Africans were 3/5 of a human being and that it was legal to kill, rape, torture, murder African people, and there was nothing wrong with it. It's the same way that now in these times they can see a man, and because he has on a police uniform, somehow he has the power and authority to murder somebody, and there's nothing wrong with it.
Nothing wrong with it.
So we got to keep in mind that these are the things that we have to begin to try to change. We talk about changing the paradigm of power. We got to get back to having the power to where we can say, no, that's not correct according to our laws.
Right. Absolutely. Totally agree. One other thing that happened, a very popular and I guess you might call a controversial figure in the African world, Dr. Umar Johnson, announced this week that he had, maybe it was last week, announced that he had purchased some property in Wilmington, Delaware, to launch finally the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey Academy. He had a video, I think it was about a 1 hour and some change video, where he's walking through this property that he says that he has purchased. And if he has, good. If he has, you know, all well and good, that's great. A lot of people, of course, immediately, and at the same, it seems that the reason why he did this announcement, he announce that he had purchased the property, but he wanted additional donations. Now, if he's done that, fine. I think there are a couple of issues here. The first issue is that Dr. Johnson has never been transparent. He gave a speech in Detroit in 2017. It was on his Kwanzaa tour. He said that he had raised $750,000. This past, I think it was October, he gave another speech where this brother really grilled him and asked him a lot of questions that he couldn't, like, get out of. And so he said that he had raised $700,000, so somewhere in the ballpark. But there's never been an official accounting of the money. You know, we don't know where the money is, you know, what bank it's in, what has been used, what has been spent, or whatever. So that's a problem, because I think if you are going to ask people for donations, you need to be 100% transparent. Everybody needs to know exactly where their money is going. So the other issue is with Dr. Johnson, even though he calls himself the Prince of Pan-Africanism, that's a heck of a name to give yourself that. I never heard Kwame Ture call himself that, or, you know, I mean, real Pan-Africanist. But everything he does is individualistic. We don't see an organization. You know, Pan-Africanism is based on traditional African communalism. So the truth will eventually come out. The building was, according to some sources, for sale for between $1.2 and $1.8 million. It is a former charter school that was closed by the state of Delaware. And so the property is real. It is in Wilmington, Delaware. There's some people that say that the former property owners, a group called K-12 Corporation, still owns the property. I'm not going to get into all of that and whatever. I'm just saying that if Dr. Johnson is serious, if he's really serious, then he would be all about the business, number one, of transparency, and number two, of about developing an organization that has some kind of accountability to the community rather than just Umar Johnson, the individual, doing this, doing that, doing whatever. So, that was my take on it.
Good point.
When I saw that video, I did see a lot of ego existing in the video. And I looked at the comments, and there's so many people. It's funny, we talk about the church all of the time. We talk about the pastors like the Creflo Dollars and who's transitioned now, Eddie Long. We also talked about him in the past. And we talk about how they often fleece the people with a sermon. And everybody rejoices looking for a savior.
Mm.
And people who consider themselves a part of the quote-unquote conscious community, which we don't subscribe to because, you know, we can see there's a lot of weird and weirdo stuff that goes on throughout that community. But they started to rejoice and praise as if a sermon was being given in the Baptist church. Thank you. I'm crying tears of joy and all these other comments that I saw. And it just lets you know the mind state of a people who are continuously looking for a savior. Or some type of symbolic sign to show some type of accomplishment or step forward. Now, we all want the school to be open. There's nobody sitting in here that doesn't want Umar to open the school and to be successful with the school. The only thing people have been advocating for is transparency in regards to the process because we have seen, we've been down the road before.
That's right.
Of the Creflo Dollars, the Baptist Church,
mm-hmm.
the Negro preacher mentality,
right?
And we're gonna ask critical questions.
We're supposed to.
I mean, anybody that is serious is gonna do that. And any community of people that are serious, if you have a community project, people within that community, whether it's the Jewish community, the Asian community, the Korean community, the Indian community, the European community, they're all going to ask critical questions and not praise or glorify one individual. And one individual should not want to be praised or glorified if they're talking about a project that's for the benefit of the totality of African people.
Absolutely.
And that's being promoted as the number one answer for the problems that we face.
Wow.
So that's just my take on it. I don't really comment on it a lot because I want the brother to succeed. And people, you know, they always going to say that you throwing shade or hating on somebody. But we just have to be critical thinkers. That's just the bottom line.
Yeah, undoubtedly, brother. I can remember Amos Wilson, once again, the great doctor, esteemed ancestor, put this propensity to want to feel good in historical context, and he compared us to abused children. You know, whenever you've been scarred emotionally, you become obsessed, Wilson talking, with the pursuit of good feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, inside of this context, you know, that we're easily seduced by fake Afrocentric people, you know, who's using this as a ruse. Or, you know, we might find escapism in the form of a church or in a mosque, you know, this sense of despair and desperation and symbolism that Barack Obama even was able to capitalize on without people.
Number one,
without necessarily being able to think critically. And
the
use,
greatest capitalizer.
Right.
Yeah, but.
It would be a shame if this is a scam.
It would be. Right. It would be devastating in so many ways. First of all, because there's already a lot of cynicism in our community, and there's a lot of distrust. And I don't blame people because of so many times, people have been misled, disappointed because we start so many projects and we never finish them. It just happened so too many times. I mean, how much can people take before? It's one reason why a lot of people just throw their hands up and say, man, look, I'm through it. I'm not dealing with it because, we see the same thing. And so, really and truly, in my opinion, people who do that knowing, we're not accusing Umar of this. We never criticized Umar regarding his degree and all the things that people jumped on him about the, his relationship with the conscious stripper and all. We never dealt with any of those kinds of things and whatnot. We don't wish nothing but the best for the brother. He is a highly intelligent brother. He's a very good speaker. He does inform people. But I'm gonna tell you, man, if this is a ruse, it would be in the category of being a race traitor.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, it's like Brother Wilson told us as a criteria. He said no individual, Wilson talking, should be a sacred cow to a point where we are unwilling, unable to conduct a careful analysis, of their particular programs, because ultimately, and I'm quoting, what's at stake is our own individual lives vis-a-vis the glory and grandeur of a particular man. Who was this who said, brother, hide no difficulty, claim no easy victories?
Cabral.
Tell no lies. Yeah. So, with that, we offer a critique.
Right. And it's not personal. It's purely from the perspective of the liberation and empowerment of African people, because that's all that really matters to us.
And it's no different than, people who criticize the president or people who criticize any project out there. Criticism is not always hate. Criticism is honest questions that need to be asked and need to be answered.
If somebody's
not providing the answer, then you can't fault people for continuously asking the questions.
Yeah, like Stokely used to, Dr. Ture used to always use this analogy from the Bible. I believe, but, help me with my unbelief. Thomas asked Jesus, let me see your hands.
Exactly. Right. What's next, brother? What you got next?
We're running out of time, but I wanted to talk about this latest confrontation between T.I. and Floyd Mayweather over the supposed boycott of Gucci. Mm. Apparently, there was some issues with Gucci and blackface and all these other things, and there was a call by celebrities to boycott Gucci. And last week, Floyd Mayweather was on camera. I believe it was TMZ that filmed him going into the Gucci store. And he made the statement that, I'm not a follower. I do what I want to do. I'm getting ready to go buy some Gucci. So T.I. came back out and put out a diss track on him on YouTube. And we don't really talk about, these guys a lot because a lot of what they do is done for self-promotion. Mm-hmm. It's always a distraction.
Right.
But I did find it very interesting the way Floyd Mayweather responded back to T.I. and to 50 Cent, where he said that, these people are playing hopscotch. First, they supposedly boycotted the NFL, but as soon as the Super Bowl came around, they were either at the game, watching it on TV, or throwing Super Bowl parties. Last week, it was R. Kelly. This week, it's Gucci. People boycott for trend, but turn around and still shop at H&M and watch the NFL. Now, that was the short part of his post. Mm-hmm. But the longer part of his post went into more detail. We said it's common knowledge that these luxury brands aren't being purchased on a large scale by the black communities that you portray you're advocating for. Yet you use the emotions of our people that are already suffering with countless issues within their own home front that you conveniently pay no regard or respect to. The same celebrities steering the pot over the brands that they without a doubt will continually buy are the same artists that inject rap lyrics fueled with drugs, murder, and sexual promiscuity into the very black communities you're pretending to care much about.
Wow.
Then he goes on to say, these same celebrities are proud deadbeat fathers and unfaithful husbands, use their platforms to rally the troops against luxury brands, yet have been the prime contributors to influencing the destruction of our people by way of their musical content and imagery. Should we boycott their music and record labels as well, or do we learn to communicate and bring solutions to the problems we're facing as a whole? As a retired and wealthy, successful man that has promoted a drug and alcohol-free lifestyle, yes, I'm a connoisseur of fine quality and top-of-the-line brands. However, unlike many of the new money celebs, I never forget where I came from. Decades before, at Dapper Dan became a designer for Gucci, I supported his work. So he's saying this is why he still supports Gucci, because of this guy that he supported. Then he goes on to say, most of you took your money into the same high-end boutiques and didn't think twice about leaving our brother and legendary designer behind until Gucci put the stamp on his back. Bottom line, if you know better, do better. Start with your own homes and the content that you mass produce and sell to our very own. Take a look at how you're representing your people first before asking someone else to do so.
Wow, I wonder who wrote that for Floyd.
That's what I was wondering.
Because I know Floyd didn't.
You know, brother, I really didn't want to put that out.
I mean, because, wow, it sounds like, you know, something.
It sounds like Dr. Harry Edwards to me.
Yeah, you know, it really does. But the points, you know, whether Floyd wrote it or like the Willie Lynch letter or somebody else, the points he raised are extremely valid. And so you know, we try not to deal with these guys because we know that that there's a massive struggle for clarity versus confusion, and that is affecting our community. We know that there's the dictatorship of the celebrity class that keeps our people constantly distracted and focused on them and whatever they are doing. You know, somebody changed underwear, and oh, you know, I mean, it's so ridiculous who's sleeping with who and who bought this and who went to Paris, you know, N-words in Paris. I mean, just all kind of crazy stuff, so we try not to deal with it. But, you know, I think that's he raised some valid points. And to his point, I saw somewhere I was flipping through something and I saw that T.I. has put out a record. I guess it was a diss record. I mean, mm-hmm. So now we're going back to this all, look, internecine conflict. I mean, who benefits? I mean, here we're back to Tupac and Biggie, all of, I mean, just going back and forth and whatnot. So, and the title itself is so, it's profane, just like whoever wrote that, if Floyd wrote it, then God bless him. It's F word, N word. Is that right? Is that the title of it?
Yeah. Yes,
it's F word, N word. And so now, what are you saying? Right. When you use that kind of language.
I mean, anybody will tell you that a lot of the destruction that takes place within our communities comes from the mainstream media, music, movies, how we're influenced by the celebrity class.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, where you're asking people to boycott and, like you said, get emotional, where he does know, most black people don't even shop at Gucci.
Because
most black people
to.
Can't afford to do it.
Can't afford to. But these celebrities can.
Right.
And they do.
Right. And another thing that he said, too, that caught my attention was when he said that... let me see if I can pull this back up here. He said, for instance, why would we as a people agree to temporarily boycott of Gucci for merely 3 months if what was done caused so much strife? Why wouldn't we agree to permanently boycott Gucci as well as all other merchandise that fall under the Carrick ownership, such as YSL, Balenciaga, Alexander McQueen, and more? I'll tell you why. Because in this day, celebrities and failing artists pick and choose the hottest trending topic as a means of seeking attention.
Exactly. And that's really what it's all about. I mean, and I don't doubt that when Floyd wore the Gucci, the blackface sweater, that he was seeking attention, and maybe it was his purpose to make this point that he's making. But absolutely, I mean, everything they do is about their aggrandizement, and to a certain extent, this is filtered into our community, because now we have a lot of people whose sole interest in promoting what's supposed to be our struggle is for they create their own brand and for their own aggrandizement. Just two quick things before we go. First, last week we lost a very, very powerful sister who was living down in Cuba, Sister Nehanda Abiodun. She was wanted by the FBI, known as Cheryl Laverne Dalton. This sister was a member of the Black Liberation Army and the Weather Underground. The FBI believes that she was one of the people who helped Asada break out of jail. And she said, I'm not going to say I was there. She said, but if the FBI believes I was there, I consider that to be an honor. She was also supposedly involved in the Brinks truck robbery that supposedly Matula Shakur masterminded, that resulted in killing of two officers. But this was a dynamic sister that most of us never heard of, don't know anything about. She was a comrade of our beloved revolutionary sister, Asada Shakur. And she was taken in by Dr. Castro rules and continued to be protected there by Raul and the others. FBI had a warrant for her. They said, you're not touching this sister out here in Cuba. You go look somewhere else. It ain't happening. So, you know, she transitioned to the spiritual world this week. The other thing is on Tuesday, February 19th, for those people, listeners who are in Charlotte, I will be speaking on the Black History Program at the library at Johnson C. Smith, and I'll be dealing primarily with how we arrived at this point in our history, dealing with an emphasis on the three cycles of white supremacy. And
give us the time, brother.
Time is 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock on February 19th at the JCSU library, and I'm gonna put something up on African Liberation Media. I already sent out an email, so those are two things that I wanted to make before we bailed out.
This has been the African Liberation Media podcast. You can find us online at AfricanLiberationMedia.com. You can also listen to and subscribe to our podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, Abibi Fahodaye.
Abibi Fahodaye, continued success. Baba Amos.
Yeah, he's Baba.
I say.
Power or the lack of power. I want to repeat this. Power or the lack of power. If your education in this institution is not about gaining real power, not jobs, because your jobs do not represent power. Not getting elected, that does not represent power either. Buying your houses and fine clothes does not represent power either. If it is not about real power, you are being miseducated and misled, and you will die educated and misled. If your study of Black history is merely an exercise in feeling good about yourself, then you will die feeling good. The study of history then must be more than the pumping up of your self-esteem and the pumping up of your pride. Those things are important, but ultimately those things are not the means by which we will save ourselves as people in this world.